Back into a Friday edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. And with it being Friday, that means it's time for the week 7 breakdown of matchups to watch, games to watch, overall college football madness to keep your eye on this weekend. Again, sorry, Tuesday game of Florida International and Liberty. We didn't watch you. We didn't talk about you. Sorry, Wednesday night game of New Mexico State, Jacksonville State. Didn't get to you. Probably don't need to get to you. These Thursday, Friday games, not really going to talk about them. A whole lot. So, but again, I'm not talking about these games by myself. So as always, co-pilot, partner in crime, Dalton Miller. Welcome in, Dalton. How are you?
Yeah, we need to apologize for last week because we didn't talk about that slate of games enough. We thought it was going to be a little bit of a down week, and it turned out to be one of the best weeks I've ever seen in college football. So you just never know. College kids are like college kickers. You cannot count that they will show up when you need them to, and a bunch of big teams lost to a bunch of teams that we didn't think had much of a shot. And honestly, when I went back through and I watched the Vandy tape against Alabama and just watched Vandy's offense in general, I mean, that offense is for real. And that offense is dangerous because they are very heavily an option team. And the option is just something that we're not used to seeing as much anymore. And when you get the option with a little bit of SEC talent, with a quarterback who can move a little bit and has a little bit of an attitude to him, the way that he plays,
yeah, dude,
that is a really, really dangerous combination. And they showed that against Alabama, who, when I went through it, I was like, dude, like, Jalen Milroe, I heard, played well. I watched him. He played outrageously well, like a fantastic game.
Yeah.
How did they lose that football game? Because they only had 42 offensive plays. Vandy just controlled the football, put it on the ground, kept the clock running, scored on like almost every single drive offensively, and that was it. They got a lucky turnover on the tipped INT from Jalen on a pass where he kind of forced it, but it wasn't a terrible decision. Like,
maybe so, a little late. Yeah, a little late.
Yeah, just a little bit of an unlucky bounce there. And honestly, it was just looked like a good football team beating a great football team on a day where things went a little bit weird from a game flow perspective. But we have a bunch of matchups to talk about. We might as well start with the Bama and South Carolina game, right? It's one of the early games.
Noon game on Saturday. First game on Saturday. Yeah. Again, Jalen Milroe, dude. That's the emphasis here. We mocked him in the first round in our mock draft that we just did to the Jets. If you know, welcome to the Big Apple there, Jalen. South Carolina, their defensive front's really good. So he handled pressure very well against Georgia. That'll be something to watch again here. He's going to get pressure. Again, I think Alabama's right side of their offensive line is pretty liable. So we might see some pressure with Milroe here. And again, how does he do that? Because last year he wasn't very good at it. Was the Georgia game a fluke? Is that something to build on? You can't be that good against the blitz and it be a fluke, though. Like, he was like 6 of 6 passing and 120 some yards and 2 touchdowns against the, like, that's not, those aren't fluky numbers. Like,
yeah, and it was him and DeBoer just had the answers. Every time Georgia blitzed, they had the answers. It was almost as if they had the defensive calls ahead of time, and they were calling offensive plays off of the defensive calls that they knew were going to happen. And he did a great job replacing the blitzer. The wide receivers did a great job with their hots as well, understanding what was going on and having the awareness. Just a really well-coached offensive football team overall, and it's showing with Jalen Milroe's ascension so far this year. But yeah, you have Elijah Pritchett, the very young left tackle for Alabama, who had a really rough year last year as a redshirt freshman. Tyler Booker, Jaden Roberts, and Parker Brailsford versus guys like Kyle Kennard on the outside. And then TJ Sanders, Tonka Hemingway, Dylan Stewart. Dylan Stewart, obviously not draft eligible yet.
But he's the best player on that defense.
But like TJ Sanders and Tonka Hemingway on the interior as well versus that Alabama interior is going to be a really interesting matchup to watch as well.
And Kennard, Kennard lit LSU up too. He's a fifth year guy, and he had some reps against Will Campbell, man. He really had some reps against Will Campbell. So I
watched Deontay Lawson and Jihad Campbell today, and Rocket Sanders is a big and athletic back. So that's another matchup that I'm really excited for.
Yeah. Yeah. Sanders, he looks a little cooked, but he is big. His lower half looks a little cooked. He's not as explosive as he was at Arkansas, but he'll run through you still. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch for sure. Tyler Booker's again, the offensive lineman to keep an eye on there against that defensive front. Parker Brailsford too. He's a sub 300 guy though. I don't know how I feel about sub 300 centers. But he's having a pretty decent season, and he'll be a good scheme fit in outside zone teams. But again, a lot of those outside zone teams are transitioning to a lot of power too, like off tempo power. And so we'll see how that kind of fits in with these sub 300 centers that kind of were the talk three, four years ago. Now are like, can we work with this?
Yeah. Well, and it's tough because when you have linebackers who are out there at 215 pounds, what's the point in running outside zone? Right. What's the point in spamming it when you can come downhill and literally move them to the safety position where they probably belong? Yeah. The 290 pound center might be starting to become a thing of the past a little bit, but like you said, having a decent year so far this year. And then Nick Emmanuori, the big safety for South Carolina, got talked about a ton on the broadcast a couple of weeks ago. Good player. They move him around. They actually put him at free safety a little bit, but I want to see him against CJ Dupree, the little bit older tight end for Alabama, and then just seeing what he does in the middle of the field against Williams, who, I mean, if he can get to the sideline before Williams does,
that'll show you,
an athletic marvel right there from Emmanuori.
I love it.
Next game, I think we can move on to the Red River rivalry, or the Red River shootout, if we are still allowed. I don't think we actually are allowed to say that, but I'm going to because that's what I know it as.
You can't do horns down either, but what's the fun in that?
What kind of bullshit? Never mind. The horns down thing is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Are they allowed to do it now that they're in the SEC? They're not in the Big 12 anymore? Because that was a Big 12 rule. Can you do
I don't know. That's a good question. That is a good question. I don't know. The Big 12's fake football anyways, so yeah. I assume horns down is fair game now. This one for me, it's those Oklahoma safeties. I got told to watch them, and I did. I think Robert Spears Jennings is kind of interesting. Billy Bowman Jr., not as much for me, is the way that I will say it. I watched him. I think every single time he carried number two vertically in the two games I watched, he literally tackled number two vertically. He just did not want to turn and run with those guys, so he didn't. He just decided to stop them in their tracks. So that was a little bit of an interesting watch. Don't really think he'll be able to do that against Isaiah Bond.
Ryan Wingo. Yeah, those guys are.
Yes. And so I'm interested to see that. I'm also interested to see Danny Stutzman, the linebacker from Oklahoma, against Jadon Blue, somebody who I am actually really excited about. He came in through injury last year, and I thought he looked really good, and I think he's looked pretty good so far this year.
He's fumbling the football quite a bit, but
yeah,
he's got to stop doing that.
Fumbles are weird, man, because fumbles are something I really struggle to care about. Like after seeing guys like JT, like Jonathan Taylor, who fumbled it like every 45 touches in college. It's like that's something that is just, it's been proven time and time again that it is a fixable issue for the most part. So I do care about it, but it's tough to really weigh it too heavily in an evaluation, because that's how I miss on Jonathan Taylor. And then obviously those safeties against Gunnar Helm as well in coverage is what I want to see.
Yep. Quinn Ewers is back this game too, so you can't talk about this game without talking about Quinn Ewers. And I this will be a good game to see how Quinn Ewers handles pressure, both mentally and live bullets from the Oklahoma defense. Because Arch Manning, as much as he didn't play as well as you would think against ULM, I thought he played extremely well against Mississippi State. And so now that that's in the back of maybe his mind, or back in the minds of his receivers or his coaching staff, or or whatever, like if he doesn't play up to snuff, that's a kind of a mental burden to carry as well. So like what's the mental fortitude of Quinn Ewers? Is he going to be gun shy? This is his second injury in 3 years now as well. And his frame is pretty slim. He's got a pretty slim frame. So how's he going to hold up against injury as well? And then Venables will throw you some curveballs. He'll throw you some changeups. And so he got him last year. Venables got him last year. So we'll
I was going to say, wasn't he, it was a bad game last year, and then wasn't he benched the year before too?
So he was hurt in his first year as a starter, he was hurt.
He was hurt.
Let me check.
I was trying to remember what player it was that got,
are you talking about the kid who went to Florida Atlantic and then Nebraska?
No, I'm not. I'm talking. Casey, I'm not even talking about. Okay. I'm talking about Spencer Rattler right now. That's what I was even thinking about.
Caleb Williams. Yeah,
I was thinking about Rattler getting benched for Caleb Williams in this game twice.
He did beat Oklahoma in 2022.
Gotcha.
He was 21-31 for 289 and four touchdowns and one interception. So he had a pretty good game against Oklahoma.
Yeah. 2022. Now my mind got scrambled between Spencer Rattler, who is starting this week. It was something that you and I wanted to see, so we're really excited about that.
Yes.
Because I actually became a pretty big fan of his when he transferred over to South Carolina, especially in that last season.
He's playing in a real offense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, Quinn Ewers coming back, a little bit of a mental toll after the injuries. That, like you said, they're mounting up a little bit, and then he also has Arch Manning kind of breathing down his neck a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the offensive tackles for Texas – up against, there's not much, but my guy, R. Mason Thomas, is quick and he can bend. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want to see, especially on that left side against Kelvin Banks Jr.
Yeah. And when I say that Venables got Ewers, I should clarify by saying that Ewers was 31 of 37 in that game with 346 yards, but he did throw two picks and he was sacked quite a few times. So in the stat sheet might not look like it, but you know, some holding of the football, a little delayed reaction to get the ball out, which is very rare to see in a Texas offense like that. So, but yeah, let's see how Ewers looks. Again, I do think that they're the second that Ewers whiffs even mediocre play, it's just naturally going to happen, right? It's Arch Manning. It's not Malik Murphy. If it were Malik Murphy, like. And I think the coaching staff, he probably has a longer leash than he does with the fan base or with draft nicks on Twitter or things like that. But like that stuff still, like if your fan base is like, that was the Spencer Rattler, Caleb Williams thing. Like the moment Rattler struggled, it was like, we'll put Caleb Williams in like almost immediately at Oklahoma that year. He ended up getting benched. But and that's the year Rattler went into the season as like the majority QB1 as well for that draft class. So.
And that just goes to show how much things can change during a single season in college football.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you have anything else from this game to really talk about?
I don't think so. I think we hit on it. Those tackles, Quinn Ewers, that Oklahoma team, Deion Burks isn't playing. That Oklahoma team, that offensive line is barren. That Oklahoma team, for the most part, this is like the worst talent-wise Oklahoma team we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, it is.
Texas should hammer them.
Yeah. I agree. Penn State, USC. I mean, I don't think there's a ton of like prospect matchups to talk about in this game. The one I'm really excited for is Tyler Warren.
Yes.
First of all, we were talking about this through text messages. The Wildcat.
It's so much fun.
With Tyler Warren is so much fun to watch. But Tyler Warren against USC linebacker, weird player. Eric Gentry, who is like 6'6", 215, plays linebacker, a little bit of edge. Like at the NFL level, probably won't have a role, but is a really fun athlete and a really good college football player. So I'm interested to see that matchup because of his length against Tyler Warren if we get a couple of man matchups in coverage there.
Yeah, again, with this game, you're probably looking at how does Nicholas Singleton look independently, how does Drew Aller look independently? Yeah. How does Penn State look independently?
Does Miller Moss survive Abdul Carter in this game? Yeah. Because
offensive line is atrocious.
That left and right tackle combination is awful.
USC's offensive line has been awful for years, and they had like legitimate Joe Moore consideration a couple years ago. And I was like, they collectively are terrible. How are they? Yeah. How are we talking about this right now? Jonah Monheim moved to center this year, which I think is best for his draft stock. He was their starting left tackle the past 2 years, but I still don't think he's an excellent center either by any means. I think it's best for his draft stock, but
those tackles are a problem.
They're rough
for them.
Yeah.
So. And then Jaquavis Marks, who is somebody I liked when he was at Mississippi State. I honestly haven't watched him since the transfer, but it's just somebody to keep an eye on, late day three type at running back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stanford and Notre Dame.
There's a pretty big individual. There's a pretty big
matchup. There's a pretty big individual matchup in this game. We watched Elik Iumanoir absolutely tear up Colorado, and specifically Travis Hunter in that football game. If he can go out and have a big game against Benjamin Morrison on the outside, that would be huge for his draft stock, because that is showing up against the absolute best opponents that you are going against on your schedule. And he is not having a big year so far. That Stanford passing attack isn't really there. Having a big game against Benjamin Morrison could do a lot for his draft stock. He's still got time. He's only a redshirt sophomore, right? Are you Iumanoir?
Let me check on that. He is. Yeah, he's a redshirt sophomore.
So he's still got time, but really good player, great frame. So you really want to see the best out of him, and you want to see Benjamin Morrison tested heavily. And I mean, he will be, because Notre Dame plays a ton of teams on their schedule. But this is one of the biggest matchups of the year for him.
Yeah, it sure is. So he's actually a redshirt junior.
Redshirt junior?
Yeah, that's what he's listed as on Stanford's website.
Sorry.
Well, no, it does say redshirt sophomore in his bio, but it also says as a redshirt sophomore 2023 in his bio too. So he's probably a redshirt sophomore, actually. But yeah, Benjamin Morrison's a good matchup to watch in this game. The only matchup to watch in this game, because Stanford, again, is another team that's pretty barren. They have been for years now. But Benjamin Morrison seems like a player, based on what I'm hearing from different agents, scouts that I kind of talk to every once in a while. Benjamin Morrison seems like one of those players that draft analysts are higher on than the actual league. So we'll see how he looks against Iumanoir. But that's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Through this.
Definitely. Now, I mean, we might as well move on to the big one. Number two versus number three, Ohio State versus Oregon. And this would be pretty much as easy as saying, just watch everybody. Just watch everybody. Specifically, watch the Oregon defensive line versus the Ohio State offensive line, because I think literally every single player on each side is an NFL player. So, I mean, you have Derek Harmon, who has been kind of going off. I watched so far. I don't love him.
I don't either.
I don't love him. But he has been very productive so far, so that'll be interesting to see. I can't remember his name, but they also have a nose tackle there who I actually do kind of like a little bit. And then Jordan Birch on the outside as well. We want to see what Josh Simmons has. And then obviously the entire Ohio State interior offensive line is one to check out as well in this game. You have guys like Donovan Jackson, and then you have Toby Wilson and Seth McLaughlin as well.
Yeah, and Josh Simmons at left tackle has been getting he's the player of the week on social media this week, I would say, from big-time offensive linemen, like evaluators like Brandon Thorne from Dane
Brugler. When Brandon Thorne is singing your praises, that perks my ears.
Yeah, it's a down tackle class, but even in a down tackle class, for Brandon Thorne to say this is my OT1 right now, and Brandon Thorne did say he views Will Campbell as a guard and Will Campbell as his offensive lineman one, but that Josh Simmons is his offensive tackle one, that's pretty high praise. I did watch the Iowa game. I haven't watched Ohio State because, like, as a draft analyst, my time is so divided, and I'm not watching Ohio State against Marshall. I'm not watching Ohio State against Western Michigan.
I'm in the exact same boat.
So let's play somebody.
Playing anybody, Paul? Yeah. They ain't playing nobody, Paul. I'm not watching you. I don't care what you do against Iowa Wesleyan. Like, I just don't.
And they did play Iowa last week, but even that Iowa edge rusher that Simmons was exclusively matched up on, number 49 from Iowa. I don't know his name. I don't mean to drag the kid, but like that guy's not an NFL player either. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see this week. He's going to have some NFL matchups. You know, the younger Uiagalelei brother is really good, and he's a rotational pass rusher for Oregon, and he's going to get some matchups there as well. So that'll be a lot of fun to keep an eye on. I am also interested in, you know, Ohio State has two draftable edge rushers and Oregon has two draftable tackles. We're getting JTT and Jack Sawyer against Josh Connerly and Johnny Cornelius. And again, I've stated on the podcast that I'm not the biggest fan of those Ohio State edge rushers. Like, I think JTT is one of those well-rounded players without a defining trait. And I think Jack Sawyer is hella explosive, but lacks a pass rush repertoire and lacks any sort of hip flexibility. And then I think on the other side of that, Cornelius is a day three swing player, honestly. And then Connerly, I do like Connerly's tools, but I still don't think he's put it together the way that I would hope that he would. And his core strength is still a huge issue. So, but that's something to watch in this game as well.
This is the biggest matchup for me of maybe the season so far, because these are four guys that I'm legitimately down on compared to consensus on all four of these guys. And I'm glad that you brought up Connerly's core strength and inability to anchor, because I think that's really where Sawyer and Tui Malau can absolutely put him into a blender. Especially Tui Malau, because if he has one defining trait, it is the through the chest explosiveness that he has. He's a strong guy. He's well built, well stacked.
That's Sawyer's thing too.
Thing. Sawyer's not as big as JT is, but they kind of win when they win in similar ways. I think Sawyer wins a little bit more as a pass rusher, and Tuim allows a little bit more of that well rounded player. But I think that's the biggest matchup to watch. I'm also interested in some of the wide receiver cornerback matchups in this game. Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson versus Denzel Burke, Jordan Hancock, and then Lathan Ransom, who I haven't watched yet.
He's playing good football.
He's testing or grading really well on PFF, and I've started to see his name pop up on social media a little bit as well. And then on the other side, Brandon Jennings is Oregon's kind of slot guy versus Mika Egbuka. In this game, if we get a bunch of Amika slot reps.
Yeah. Oregon corner Jabbar Muhammad has some hype too. I've never really seen it. He's a Washington transfer to Oregon. It's not a guy I've really seen it, especially in this corner class. Like,
no. No, I mean, I know what people are seeing in terms of, you know, NFL player, but that's really about it with him. Like, that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Ole Miss and LSU. And we just got to start with the quarterbacks. Jackson Dart, Garrett Nussmeier, what do you guys got for us?
Yeah, I was that's a lot nicer of a way of saying it than I was going to say it. So,
you might be the man who is the lowest on Garrett Nussmeier in the entire world, from what I've gathered on social media, because he has a lot of fans.
He does
on social media.
And I have not talked to anybody in the league who has him graded higher than a day three player right now.
Yeah. And I don't think that they should. And this is what I'll say. I think if you're going to survive in the league as a pocket passer, you have to be absolutely locked in to doing that and being good at that and excelling at that. And he's not there yet. And part of that is probably because he just hasn't had the reps. He's spent years and years and years as Jaden Daniels' backup. He's got a great arm. But once that arm is outside of the structure of the offense and he has to get on the move, his accuracy It doesn't just go down a little bit. He legitimately cannot hit the broadside of a barn when he's on the move. And I'm sorry, you can't survive in the NFL like that if you're not going to be absolutely automatic in rhythm and structure and be able to just absolutely pick apart defenses. He's got the arm. When he is in rhythm, he looks really good a lot of the times, but I think you need to be able to create a little bit to survive at the NFL level, and I don't think that he has it. It's not Mac Jones bad. He's more athletic than Mac Jones.
A little bit more, but I think Mac is probably the closest comp that you could find him of an NFL.
Yeah, Mac didn't have the arm that Nussmeier has, but the thing with Mac is, when I watched him, was I think for the entire year, and he threw the ball 450 times, he had 9 plays that I graded where he was on the move throwing the football.
Yeah.
That is what that offense could do for you.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I look at Nussmeier, I really just see what people kind of saw with Joe Burrow before his breakout year. He's just a day 3 guy. You kind of see it, you kind of don't. But obviously a different player than Joe, because Joe was fantastic inside the pocket, creating throwing windows and kind of skirting pressures and stuff like that. But he didn't have as much of an arm. Nussmeier has more of an arm. He has a really good relationship with Lacy. But outside of that, the relationship with the other wide receivers isn't really there. He does a lot of work with Kyron Lacy. He kind of forces the ball to Kyron Lacy at times. And it's working because they have a really good relationship. But I'm not as high on him, but I don't think I'm as low as you are.
Yeah. For me, a lot of it comes down to, I don't think he can create explosive plays. I think his body of work over the middle of the field is pretty good, and he throws those hash and seam balls pretty darn well, and I'll give him that. But I have him charted so far as 4 of 15 on passes 25 yards or deeper down the field. On the season, 4 of 15 on target, not completed on target, which is abysmal. The Nicholls State game, which is, I think a lot of people were like, oh yeah, he beat the crap out of Nicholls State. He was 1 of 11 on passes over 20 yards in depth in that game. A lot of the body of work in that game was after the catch, or over the middle. And so I don't know what to do with that. And I've noticed that his balls kind of start to flutter when he doesn't have a firm, when his base is not set.
Yeah.
I don't know if his arm is as good as I think you would say it is, mainly because guys who have A-tier arms, even without a base, can rip that thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's part of that is a big part of the accuracy issues when he moves off of his base as well.
Yeah, and he moves off of his base a lot. I think he's
unnecessarily.
Unnecessarily behind two of the better offensive tackles in the nation. And he drifts left. He drifts behind Will Campbell all the time. I don't know if you've noticed that, but he's just a pocket drifter. He just shuffles.
So I haven't noticed it. I haven't noticed it specifically left, but I have noticed that he does drift in the pocket. And that's something that absolutely irked me about Drake May, not in his draftable season, but the year before. He just would float left every single play. When he was throwing left, when his read structure was on the left side of the field, he would float left and step left right into the feet of the left tackle, and it absolutely screwed him up. And so I haven't noticed it specifically left with Nussmeier, but I have noticed that he drifts quite a bit for somebody who it should be remaining in the pocket as much as possible.
Right.
But we've spent, I think, enough time talking about Garrett Nussmeier. We should probably move. But we'd like to bring this stuff up because when we are away from consensus, we really need to explain why we are.
Right.
And then Miller Moss. I mean, yeah, I was bringing up Miller Moss again from USC just because I saw him go first overall in a mock draft, and I still can't believe that. But Jackson Dart. Against this LSU defense, and I say this LSU defense it's really good. I don't really think it is very good. But you need to stack games in the SEC if you want to be taken seriously as an NFL draft prospect, Jackson Dart. So I'm looking forward to that. Will Campbell and Emory Jones versus Princely Umanmilan. and Jared Ivey. Jared Ivey playing really, really well so far this year. A big, big rusher. And I'm really interested to see how these long pass rushers look against Will Campbell at left tackle. And then obviously with Emery on the other side, not from an athletic standpoint per se, but just from a technical perspective with their length versus what is his strength and his flexibility and his athletic ability and length himself. So more interested in the Will Campbell matchup because of the length issues that he has.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm actually probably more interested in the Emery one because I think I've pretty much pegged Will Campbell as a tackle or as a guard. As a guard. So like,
you just don't care at this point.
I just don't care about his length. He's a guard. I mean, your arms are 32 inches. Like you're a guard, where I haven't done that with Emery. And I think Emery has the length and the flexibility and the foot speed to play. I mean, foot speed's not an issue with Will Campbell, but the flexibility and the length to play tackle at the NFL level. So I'm interested in that. And again, Jackson Dart, I think, is one of those guys that, like, in bad quarterback classes, we try to force somebody. Mm-hmm. And Jackson Dart is one of those guys that people have, I think, are forcing. And I like Dart, but I like him as a 10-year veteran, as a career backup and spot starter. You know, I think his tools
Chase Daniel, right? Yeah, there.
Pretty middle of the road, right? Yeah. Like, and then his body of work against the SEC the past 2 weeks has been a significant drop off from what he was doing against Middle Tennessee and Wake Forest and Georgia Southern. So, you know. That's pretty concerning too.
Somebody I'm not worried about.
Trey Harris.
Is Trey Harris. and Trey Harris, listen, Zy Alexander has been, there's been some injury stuff with him. I think he's back for this game and healthy. But J.K. Johnson is the guy who has kind of been stepping up in that role and been playing half decent for them on the outside. And then Ashton Stamps, who is not draft eligible, younger guy for LSU, but I'm interested to see that matchup specifically against Trey Harris, kind of to see how Ashton does, because I think he might be sort of that future LSU defensive back that we all kind of start to circle as he gets a little bit older. And Trey Harris is somebody who we obviously love on the podcast.
Yeah. And he's not getting any younger. So he's the polar. It's polished versus, versus high ceiling young guy. Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Trey Harris, man. Can he keep doing it? It's kind of felt again with him too, not so much against Kentucky, because he was the only player that was productive against Kentucky in that game. He had 81 yards against South Carolina too on just three catches. But can he stay as productive in SEC play? The Kentucky game was an excellent start. Excellent start. And again, Maxwell Hairston was on that game. So that can't be understated as well. Like, a top 50 corner didn't play in that game. So, but Trey Harris is on a Biletnikoff finalist type run so far this season up there with the two freshmen, you know? So, that's such a weird, a fifth year senior, and two freshmen.
It's such a funny college football season because the best players at corner or no, not a corner at wide receiver, at quarterback and at edge might all be freshmen or redshirt freshmen.
Yep.
And the best player in the country might be 17. It's
bizarre.
Outrageous.
Yeah. But yeah, Trey Harris, man, keep it up.
Yeah. Trey Harris, keep it up. The last kind of matchup I want to talk about here real quick is just Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter playing a good football team. Because we saw how that happened, that worked last year. This is kind of where their season fell apart. And so it will be very interesting to see once they get into the thick of Big 12 play, which I say Big 12 is fake football, and it very much for the most part is, but they will be playing much better competition throughout the rest of the year. And I'm interested to see mostly if Travis Hunter is just able to stay healthy all year, playing over 100 snaps a game. That's an Iron Man award right there. That is, yeah. I don't think people really, and they talk about it. They say, you know, it's amazing that he might be the best corner in college football, probably is the best corner in college football, and then also is one of the most productive wide receivers in college football as well. It's special what he has accomplished so far this year. I just worry about the mileage that he is putting on his body right now.
I agree too, especially because I don't think he's fully grown into his frame either. He's a very thin dude.
Yeah.
So
how can you grow into your frame when you're playing 150 snaps? Like you can't eat enough to keep weight on.
I know. Jeez. But there's no doubt in my mind, he's the best player in college football right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we'll see. And again, another thing with this Colorado team is that, again, Big 12 football is fake football. But Kansas State is the most physical opponent they'll play all season.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, maybe Utah when that comes around too, but this is the most physical team they'll play all season. So
probably not a good matchup because we know what that Colorado offensive line looks like.
Yeah, and we know what their defensive line looks like too. Yeah. So
big game from DJ Giddens if you guys play daily fantasy in college football.
Speaking of running backs having a big game, how about Ashton Jantzi playing Hawaii this weekend?
Oh God. Yeah, he's going to have 1,300 yards. Yeah. He's going to have 1,300 yards by the end of that game. That's it for college football this week. I don't think we have anything else to talk about, right? We've been on this for 35 minutes talking about matchups.
That's a great one. Just a random thing. I'm going to be watching Diego Pavia against Kentucky as well, but not really an NFL draft thing. That's just a college football fun storyline to follow. So yeah,
Vandy is so much fun.
Oh yeah.
So much fun. All right, that's it. Have a good weekend, you guys. Enjoy the college football. Enjoy the NFL weekend if you guys like NFL football as well. And we will be back on Tuesday with our helmet stickers and a recap of this hopefully fantastic week of college football. As always, he is Corey Kinnon, or the fake Corey Kinnon, whether or not you like his name or his fake name. I am Dalton Miller. I love you. Goodbye.